From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It was 1999 when the writer John Krakauer first encountered members of the polygamist sect, the FLDS. He had driven through Colorado City, their compound on the border of Utah and Arizona, and he was captivated but also watched and followed all the way back to the highway.
My head was spinning, and what I didn't know at the time is I was just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Things were way stranger and way creepier than I ever could have imagined.
It began an obsession for Krakauer with Mormon fundamentalism, one he shared with the private investigator Sam Brower. Their writing on FLDS leader Warren Jeffs is the basis for Amy Berg's new documentary called Prophets Pray. Today in the program, she's joining us to talk about the film, which explores Jeffs' sex crimes, but also the powerful hold he has over his followers. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The writer John Krakauer and the private investigator Sam Brower have both spent about a decade exploring the polygamist sect, the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in Amy Berg's new documentary, they say that members of that sect had always blindly followed their leaders, but when Warren Jeffs came to power, things were different. Jeffs prohibited television, for example, the internet, newspapers. He took away pets and games and celebrations. He had an obsession with younger and younger girls. The idea, they say in the film, was to see just how much his people would tolerate and whether they would obey the prophet. Berg's documentary explores the FLDS culture, and it profiles Jeff's strange and criminal leadership, the underage marriages, the sexual abuse, but also how it was he was able to seize control of the church and keep hold on it, even now, as he's confined to prison for life. The film is called Prophets Pray, and Amy Berg is joining us today to talk about it as we continue our documentary series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening the film next Wednesday. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. You can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Amy Berg's previous films include West of Memphis, about the West Memphis Three, and the film also Deliver Us from Evil, which you may remember, about a Catholic priest who molested countless young boys and girls, that received an Academy Award nomination in 2007. She's joining us today from the studios of NPR West in Culver City. And Amy Berg, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Doug. Nice to be here today.
One thing I should mention, and I have on the as we've been promoting this, is that, of course, this premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. And we'll give you details, by the way, about the screening as we go along. Well, I guess let's start, Amy Berg, with the beginning, at least your first encounter with the story. I guess, as I understand it, John Krakauer and Sam Brower, they came to you.
Yes, actually, about 2.5 years ago, I was approached by John and Sam. And I read Sam's book, which is an amazing book, Prophets Pray, yeah. Just captivating. The investigation just really, you know, really powerful investigation that he and John did over the years. And then I took some time to listen to Warren Jeffs himself through his sermons and the music of the church. And I just found myself so interested in knowing more because he speaks in a monotone voice and he didn't have that charisma that you would expect from somebody leading this many people. And so I just kind of wanted to go deeper and find out more about the story.
What interested you, though, do you think about that? The film tells the story of the, you know, his crimes, the sexual exploitation, mm-hmm. I mean, all of that stuff. But did you see a theme or something developing as you were thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, I found it so interesting that we know so much about Warren Jeffs, yet his followers don't believe what we know to be true after trials and convictions and numerous accountings. So I just couldn't understand how a man could lead 10,000 or more people from prison. That just the concept of that is so interesting to me.
I wanted to ask you about this, his voice, Warren Jeff's voice, his God's voice. Let me play a clip because you, of course, include it. I mean, you weave this voice throughout the film, of course, and it seems one of the a reporter in the film that you interview, what does he refer to it as? The God's voice? Is that how he puts it?
Yeah, he's invoking the God voice.
The God voice, yeah. Let me play a clip here. This is Warren Jeffs talking about how school for girls, and I guess for leaders in general, is not a priority. It's where did you get all of this, by the way? I suppose we should start there. How were you able to come across all of this tape?
Well, much of it exists in the public record in the trial in Texas. And Sam Brower has been collecting these sermons over the years, so he was able to share a lot with us. And some is even available online, but we were able to collect an amazing amount of these sermons.
Yeah, let's play a little bit so you get a sense of what Warren Jeff sounds like.
School is not your top priority. It is your preparation to be filled with the Holy Ghost. That is the most important labor you have individually and in your families. We are here as the people of the prophet Joseph to live the law of celestial and plural marriage in the Holy United Order, so that we can be that favored people the prophet Joseph can use in redeeming Zion.
So when you hear that, it's interesting to hear you say that what surprised you or what interested you was that why that would work on people, because it does. It lacks a kind of charisma. There's not much energy there. It kind of drones on. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? What are they hearing in that, do you think? It's kind of mesmerizing in some ways, though.
Yeah, it has a bit of a hypnotic quality. And being in the Edabe for as many hours as one is when they're making a documentary, you kind of find yourself in this trance often.
Right.
That combined with the idea that is foreign to most people of being actually brainwashed from birth. I think we've studied cults. You know, I don't know if you saw the Scientology film at Sundance, which was amazing, going clear. And, you know, the Jim Jones story, and you hear about people coming into this kind of organization with a purpose, with a goal. But in this particular cult, they know nothing other than this is the way to be, to get to the afterlife. And it's all about, you know, the process of not knowing anything else. So I think that is what I discovered, you know, as I was going along, is that how do you reprogram someone who's been brainwashed since they were born that, you know, red is bad and that they should only follow the law of this man and, you know, that everything that is a privilege that we enjoy as people that are not in the FLDS, that those are the forbidden things. So I thought that was, you know, it was just really, it's just interesting to imagine that there is this other perspective that has, it's black and white and there's no gray in it.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about John Krakauer and Sam Brower, because they play such a critical role in telling the story in the film. Let's start with John Krakauer. Describe his relationship with the story. He mentions his first encounter in Colorado City, which is in 1999, and he's sort of driving through there, becomes kind of interested in it. He gets followed in the town, and that really gets him started thinking. How do you describe his relationship with Mormon fundamentalism broadly, but also in particular this story?
Well, I mean, I hesitate to speak for John, but I did see was just his personality. He's got a very curious side to him, like we all do as journalists. And he just couldn't understand something that he had maybe seen from a distance at different points in his life. And he wanted to know more. And this story it's like that. It's one of those, it's like the onion that you keep peeling the layers on, because these people that have finally escaped and the people who haven't escaped, I mean, their stories are so powerful, and there's just, you want to help, you want to know more. And I think he came from that perspective. I mean, he actually adopted a lost boy and has helped get him, got him a high school diploma, a college degree, has helped, you know, he's such a passionate man that really wanted to seek justice, which is what they ultimately did.
And Sam Brower, explain his relation. They're both obsessed. I guess it's fair to say that. Mm-hmm. They're both really obsessed with this story. Yeah. Talk about Sam.
I mean, Sam is a member of the LDS Church, and I think it's very important to say that for people that maybe don't understand the difference, that this is an extreme faction of a church, no different than, let's say, ISIS. Yeah. These are not the majority of the Mormons in the country, in the world, or especially in Utah, because that's where we focused most of our story. Sam is a private investigator who started by helping kids who had been abused in early days in the church. Mm-hmm. And he ultimately brought all these cases forward that helped the investigators to take Warren down.
What's it like for Sam Brower to go into that town? Short Creek, as it's referred, but it's Hilldale in Colorado City. Mm-hmm. It's there on the border. Because, I mean, it's such a strange... I mean, you yourself encountered the same problem. I mean, these are incorporated cities, of course, so legally people can come in, but it's so controlled by the church. They're so suspicious. They're so evasive. What's it like to go into that town and try to not just talk to people, but film them?
Yeah, it's tricky. You know, Sam warned us because, you know, they're known to get people's information off their cell phones once they enter the town. They chase you around. We've got cornered a couple times by the God Squad. The God Squad are these men who are driving around in these huge Ford trucks with tinted windows, and they're there to intimidate you, solely to intimidate you. They're armed. It is like entering a war zone in many ways. We would have things thrown at us. We would start shooting an interview and they would be blasting the music. Mm. Kids, a young boy couldn't have been more than 7 years old, threw a rock at my DP one day, my cameraman, and hit him in the face. I mean, it was really interesting.
Let me play another clip. This is Sam Brower talking about that. You drive around with him and you get a sense of he's just constantly being watched. Here's another moment from Amy Berg's film, Prophets Pray.
As we come into town, you can start to see cameras all over the place on all these buildings. Church security and the town marshals already know we're here. They probably picked us up out by Canaan Gap. And in fact, there's church security right here.
It gives the film a really creepy feel, I have to say, really eerie. And one thing I think is interesting just as a filmmaking technique is some of these drive-by images that we see of people clearly not pleased with the fact that they're being filmed. They almost seem lyrical. I mean, they seem strange and a little creepy, but there's some kind of lyrical quality in them. And I'm wondering, was that intentional? Did you want to sort of contrast that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And that's a nice way to put it. I feel like there is a real distance between the two sides of the story, the inside and the outside. And so we were only able to observe the inside from the outside. And so it was, you know, the way that I chose to tell that part of the story. And I think that combined with Sam's play and Warren Jeff's words and the music of the people inside kind of gives you a glimpse into their life. And the stories of the people that we interviewed who hadn't spoken to anyone before, telling us about what it is like to be inside and what it's like to be on the outside right before you get on the outside. So the people that were starting to pull away had really interesting stories towards the end of their time in the FLDS.
that interested me, your conversations with them and how you established a sense of trust. And it's interesting, I've read where you've talked about how before you turn on the camera, you like to establish rapport, which I think makes sense. Mm-hmm. But you're also taking a risk there, because what if they don't reveal that later? Or, you know what I mean? I mean, I think that's an interesting technique. But I guess you had to establish that to really get them to talk to you in a real way.
Yeah, I mean, I do that on all my films. It's a risk that I take, but I've never failed at that. I mean, I feel like it's really important for me as a filmmaker to make sure that my subjects are not feeling exploited. That is my goal going into any shoot or interview. I'm so sensitive to that. No matter what side of the story they're on, that I'm depicting them accurately and that they feel comfortable with my, we'll call it, agenda in making a film.
Right. And of course, we should mention that you tried to interview Warren Jeffs himself in prison. Didn't go very well, but you showed up a lot. I mean, you tried. You were pretty tenacious.
I wrote him 2 letters a week for almost a year. He never responded to anything. But we did there was a coup in the process of making the film that Sam Brower was able to get a deposition of Warren and we were able to record it. So we have that. And I think that it doesn't reveal anything, as you can see. And if these guys can't get anything out of him with all of their experience and, you know, and the law on their side, I don't know how much further I would have gotten with him.
Yeah.
But his answers are very much like his monotonastic style. He doesn't say anything except I guess I'll leave a little bit for the audience, but he says a few things, but they're not very revealing.
No, not much at all. I mean, he just invokes the Fifth, and it's but I have to say it really works as an element to the film, though. I mean, he's not really giving you anything, but that in of itself is revealing, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, the film, I wanted to make a quiet film because I feel like this story, these people represent that tone, and I didn't want to make this very aggressive, investigative, you know, just aggressive would have been the wrong way to go for this story, I think. And I try to, you know, establish a tone with every film that I do. So this is definitely representative of, I think, what their world is.
Amy Berg is with us. Her film is called Prophet's Prey. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night. It's part of our Through the Lens film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. It's going to be at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Admission is free, but we suggest you arrive early to get a seat. Amy Berg is going to be there. Sam Brower is going to be there as well to join us for the Q&A after the film. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West. On KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Amy Berg's film about polygamist leader Warren Jeffs. It's called Prophet's Prey. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's built around the work of the writer John Krakauer and the private investigator Sam Brower to chronicle Jeff's sexual exploitation of children. It explores how Warren Jeffs managed to seize control of so many people's lives and how, even today from prison, he's holding this grip on power. We're going to be screening the film next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. We'll give you details about that. Today in the program, Amy Berg is joining us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City to talk about the film. So, as you said before, this is an offshoot, the FLDS, of mainstream Mormonism, when the mainstream Mormon church abandoned plural marriage in 1890. I wanted to ask you about, because you explored this in the film, how the church changes and evolves. We start to see Reuelen Jeffs. This is Warren Jeffs' father. But Warren Jeffs, it seems like, dramatically changes the church in different ways. What was it like under Reuelen, I guess, and how do you see we'll talk about the particulars, but how do you see broadly Warren Jeffs transforming this church?
Well, I think there are a lot of misnomers about Rule, and I think that all of it started there in the interviews and discussions that I had with people who were his former head of security, especially Ron Robeck. All of these principles began with Rulin in terms of one man rule. That was kind of a game changer for this section of the church,
yeah,
because it took away anything democratic about the way it was ruled. But what Warren did is the younger the brides, the better for Warren. And that just became this new kind of tone of the church. And so suddenly as Rulin was declining, he had a stroke, and then his health was failing towards the end. And then Warren started marrying all these young girls to his father. And then he inherited those wives as soon as his father passed on. And I think we think that he had over 90 wives, has over 90 wives, I should say, mm-hmm, at the time that he was arrested and convicted. And I think that the scary thing is that his brother Lyle, who's running it today, isn't that different from him. And they're running it together. But if something were to happen to Warren, or if Lyle were to take over, things aren't that different. And that's what Sam fears. I think it's important to point out, we talked about Sam a little bit earlier, but Sam is actually still working on this investigation,
yeah,
day in and day out. And the big reveal in our film, I don't think this is a reason to not see the film, but something that happened towards the end of our filmmaking has to do with women being taken out of the country with no passports to Mexico. And that is the focus of Sam's investigation right now, is he believes through very credible sources that some women are being taken against their will and they want to leave. And so we're trying to use the film as, you know, to advocate for those women. And we're trying to use this as a tool to, you know, educate people over in Mexico City, which is very close to where the women are being taken, which Sam can talk about in detail at the Q&A next week.
Yeah. Warren Jeffs, you tell the story of how he sort of comes to power. And that part kind of begins not far from here in Sandy, Utah, this elementary school set up by the FLDS called the Alta Academy. And this is kind of where Warren Jeffs gets his start. And it's interesting, we see Sam Brower in the film touring the place with a flashlight. I mean, it's kind of now abandoned. I mean, how did you get that?
I think that's really interesting. And one of the things you see in the film is you see these academies and compounds popping up in beautiful places. And I love Salt Lake City. I come there often, and I've skied numerous times in Deer Valley and Alta. And this academy is literally right at the base of this amazing ski resort, which,
yeah,
is so strange to me that you have, you know, he always, as John says in the film, he has really good taste in real estate.
Right.
But it's kind of scary to think that you could live in a remote, beautiful area and have the FLDS as your neighbors. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with them? Who knows when, you know, they're going to drink the Kool-Aid if they do. And so that was really, really surprising to me. We got in through numerous requests. There's a caretaker there who allowed us to film the property. And we were there with Brent Jeffs, who was abused numerous times there when he went to school there. And I believe that they were about to knock it down. I don't know if it's happened in the last month or not, but I think it's going to be taken down shortly.
You talk about the sense of indoctrination that happens in a place like this, in a school like this, where young people are taught what is described as priesthood history. This is not U.S. history or conventional history. It's priesthood history. What's priesthood history?
Oh, this is something that broke my heart. I met one of Warren's former wives, who is now out. She's about 26 years old now. She's been out for about almost, I think, 7 or 8 years. And she told me about her education. And, you know, she got out. She didn't know anything besides what they had taught her. And I just find this so interesting that they only teach these young kids what they want them to know about the leader and the FLDS. So they are completely ignorant to regular education, traditional education. So, you know, you just hear these stories about kids that are 14 that don't know how to do math or don't know how to read. And it's just very, you know, the idea is to keep them docile and obedient. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's goes back for centuries. And I think that's what Warren Jeffs has been successful at.
I wanted to ask you about this former wife that you talked to. Jeanetta Jessup is her name. She's wife number 63, it says in the film. Mm-hmm. Talk about the process of gaining her trust as well. She was pretty candid with you, but I have to say, even though she's no longer involved, she still seemed a little gun shy. I mean, it was interesting. It seemed fairly fresh in her mind still, all of these experiences.
Yeah, I mean, everything she knew growing up, she had to abandon in order to gain her freedom. And it's just, I think it's so hard for anyone to understand. I think the film does a good job to illustrate that you have to leave your whole family behind. I mean, I can't even imagine this girl who knew nothing, who needed to get out and couldn't have access to her parents, couldn't have access to her siblings, and she feels very guilty. And so I don't think you can expect much more than what she was able to offer. It wasn't like when the camera was off, she was saying anything too much more revealing than what she told us. But I hope that as she, you know, stays out and continues to get experiences in life, that she'll be able to reveal more.
Let me play a clip from the film. This is Jeanetta Jessup from Prophet's Prey.
When he asked me to marry him at 16, I honestly believe that that's what God wanted. Basically, my mom just woke me up and says, you know, hurry, we got to get you dressed. You have an appointment with the prophet. And my dad took me down there to talk to him. And I kind of knew it was coming. I knew because I'd never had an appointment first off with him. So I kind of knew what he was going to ask me. Not him specifically, but I kind of knew that I was going to get married. Basically, I just went in there and I sat in front of him and he asked me straight out, will you marry me? And honestly, I was still a kid. I didn't understand what it means, what it truly means. I feel like being married at 16 took away my entire life. Giving all that up at 16, I feel like I just, at that point, from that point on, my entire life has been chaos.
Amy Berg, do you think Warren Jeffs is a just straight out pedophile?
Yeah. I mean, from every accounting, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that he showed signs of it as a young boy, and I'm sure that something happened to him when he was younger.
It's interesting. How much of that do you think his kind of sexual proclivities, his sexual obsessions, how much of that do you think defines the church? I mean, it is, and I mean, these underage brides, for example, I mean, how much of, you know, is his libido built into kind of the dogma of the church today, do you think?
That's a great question. I think it is. I think it's more Warren than the church. I don't think that this group is made up of a bunch of pedophiles. I think that he's just encouraged and permitted this type of behavior, and it's a male-female thing in many ways of keeping women in their place. But he is a sick man. I mean, when he was pulled over, he had a tape of his rape of a 12-year-old girl on his person.
Yeah.
So who knows if he was listening to that or if he was hiding evidence, I don't know. But it was, you know, that says a lot.
Now, I didn't pull that part from the film because I figure it's going to take about an hour of context in the film before people are going to be able to kind of bear it. But I did want to ask you about it, this moment, because you do play a bit of it in the film. Was it a difficult decision to decide to play that? And because it's horrifying to imagine, let alone listen to, Talk about your decision as you were thinking about, should I put it in, should I not? I mean, what were you thinking about that part?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel the jury had to listen to it.
Yeah.
And numerous people have heard about it but don't believe it. And I felt like it was there was never a point where I wasn't going to do it. It was a matter about how I would use it.
Right.
And I think that it, I think you, you know, we're going as far as we go in this film. And I think that you can't just tease something and not, you know, not play it. So I thought that if there's a chance that maybe people who had heard that maybe he raped a 12-year-old, but they weren't sure about it, mm-hmm. and then the word might spread, I thought that that would do more good than offending a couple of people.
Right.
So the placement was important, though.
I think, for sure.
You had to be ready for
it. You do. I mean, I think that, and where it comes, I think, is right. But it also comes, and we'll get into this a little bit more, in terms of the trial and the raid on the Yearning for Zion compound in El Dorado, mm-hmm. Texas. There are images, of course, from the temple that is evidence that comes in. And there's this, what do you want to say about this? This ritualistic bed. And I guess this is where this rape really takes place. I mean, how ritualistic is this sort of sexual component? And I mean, how does Warren Jeffs or anyone really explain that part?
Well, they explain it as if it's, you know, coming directly from God. It's staged in such a way that it looks like a set from, you know, some kind of a Roman film or something. And I think that this is part of the indoctrination. And I think that they ritualize these things to, you know, to justify them further. But I think from the outside, it's just shocking. And you just can't look at that bed without imagining who was in that room.
Yeah.
How is this happening? Who was taping that? You know, it's like, it's just so unsettling just seeing the bed.
This idea of oneness comes up in Warren Jeffs' sermons. I want to play a clip from the film where he talks about this, and he's talking to women, girls, about being, you know, outwardly beautiful, but this idea of oneness. Let me play this because I wanted to ask you about this because this seems a part of the indoctrination too. Mm-hmm. This is Warren Jeffs from Amy Berg's film, Prophets Pray.
Outwardly, you're all beautiful. You dress right. You learn to do your hair right. But inwardly, some of you ladies are so far distant from me. You don't even comprehend what oneness is. Your condition of a lack of oneness is driving me away.
What's this oneness? What's that about? You hear that from time to time. Unity. What does he mean?
I mean, look, this is a person who knows that any man who starts to get any level of power and respect in this group is a threat to him, that in his mind. So he cannot allow a marriage to get between him and his followers. And he uses this to keep the women docile and obedient, as I said earlier. And if he decides to get rid of a husband, this wife and her children will all just be placed with another family. And that's part of it. So it's just the attachment is only between Warren and his followers. Marriage doesn't really mean much in that sense.
Well, and we should mention, we don't have time to sort of go into all of their particular stories, but there are various people who talk about having their families taken from them. Ronald Roback is one. Wallace Jeffs, this is Warren's brother, experiences the same kind of thing. And their stories are that you tell in the film are pretty heart-wrenching.
Right. And I think you can't talk about those two without mentioning Ross and Lori Chatwin, who literally have given up the church and are fighting to keep their home because he tried to pull their family apart. And they are sitting there in their house with not much income coming in, and they're waiting to be evicted, basically, because the state runs the trust, which actually holds all the paperwork on all these homes.
Amy Berg is with us. Her film is called Prophet's Prey. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens documentary film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Amy's going to be there. Sam Brower will also be there for a Q&A after the film. You can get any details you want on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. I should also say you need to come early if you're going to get a seat. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking with the documentary filmmaker Amy Berg about her latest film called Prophet's Prey, which premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's a profile of the FLDS culture, in particular, its polygamous sect leader, Warren Jeffs. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night. We'll give you more details about that. Amy Berg is joining us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City. So one element of the film that you take on is the question of how the state or different states responded to the Warren Jeffs crimes, really, what they did and what they didn't do. Do you want to talk about that part? Because this is an interesting part. Utah, obviously, the state of Utah comes into play here. Say something about that, if you would.
Yeah, I think that the raid that happened in Texas really was the straw that broke the camel's back for the church. I mean, it without that, Warren Jeffs probably would not be in prison right now.
Right.
So I think that the evidence that was collected at that seizure of evidence that was collected at that raid was unbelievable for the state of Texas and for the case against Warren Jeffs. It was tricky because in Utah, he was, you know, he was an accomplice. He was not named as a rapist. He was an accomplice.
Right.
Those charges weren't, as much as the jury wanted to put him away for life, those charges weren't going to stick for long. And when there was an appeal filed, Texas stepped up to the plate because they had a case that was ready to go. And it's important to say there's this beautiful small town called El Dorado, Texas,
right.
And this amazing group of people that really took this case on and investigated Warren Jeffs. And, you know, he bought 1,800 acres of land in a small town and built a compound there. I mean, he was building a stage to meet with all the world leaders. He thought that everyone was going to fly to El Dorado, Texas, and meet with him. And talk about, you know, I have actually no idea what he was planning on talking to them. And Sam would probably know. But anyhow, this raid in Texas was the first time that there was so much proof. There were all these underage girls pregnant, and it was a game changer for this whole case against Warren Jeffs. So This trial that took place in San Angelo, right near El Dorado, was where the rape tape was played,
yeah.
And all of these former members who were victims were able to speak out against him, and it was justice. Everyone thought that would be the end of it, but as I said, you know, Warren Jeffs made sure that nobody was there except his brother Lyle, and that information did not make it to his people.
Randy Mankin is this reporter with the El Dorado Success. That's the newspaper there.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great character in the film. He's really dogged in his pursuit of this story. The sheriff, is it Schleicher County, I guess?
Schleicher
County, El Dorado.
Yeah.
He's a great character in the film. I mean, there are all of these. It's funny that like these small town guys, like Brower is an investigator,
mm-hmm.
and you've got crack hour, and they're all coming together to figure mm-hmm. this guy out. It's a really interesting yeah. element of the film.
Yeah, and you can't not mention South Dakota in that yeah. discussion, because unfortunately now that's the hot spot, and all the neighbors around this huge compound are worried about what's going to happen next. Their flatbed trucks are coming in a couple times a week with all these building supplies. They've just applied for this huge water tank. There are known to be a couple hundred people there, which, you know, and they're requesting water to supply thousands. So, you know, when we went down there, Sam Brower was flying from, I think he was flying from Salt Lake. His plane was full of FLDS members mm-hmm. headed down that way. So there's a real fear that you know, that's going to be the next spot for them.
Mancos, Colorado, South Dakota, as you mentioned, Mexico, Canada. I mean, the idea of Warren Jeffs trying to sort of expand the kingdom and spread out is an element of the film. You write about how Sam Brower and Krakauer were instrumental in getting Warren Jeffs on the FBI's most wanted list. Now, there's this great image of Warren Jeffs' photo right next to Osama bin Laden's.
It's great.
And this is when, as Krakauer mentions in the film, the floodgates really open and the tide starts mm-hmm. to turn. And Warren Jeffs, as you'll hear in this clip here, he talks about how he has to go into hiding.
I am not safe here. There is not a oneness drawing from the heavens the protection needed to keep me here. And now the Lord has declared that my only protection will be to go into hiding among the wicked. Think of it.
Think of it. I mean, this is such a weird part of the story, I have to say. It's great the way you tell it in the film, because this Krakauer talks about, this is Warren Jeffs' tour of America. You know, he gets in his Bermuda shorts and his T-shirts. Not just a Harley Davidson, flashy chrome Harley Davidson. He gets in, you know, of course he's captured in a cherry red Escalade. And he likes these. This is such a strange part of the story. And this really did alienate some people when he was finally arrested, that he'd been telling everyone to wear these prairie dresses and long sleeve shirts. And he's, you know, he's kind of living it up.
Yeah, it's interesting that one side of it, you just mentioned that it did alienate certain people that were on the fence about him to begin with. And then they saw that and they thought, wow, you know, what does that mean? But the other side of it is Warren has been preaching to his followers that the government is out to get them, and this is the end of the world and Armageddon, and all of this is on its way. And then these law enforcement officials show up in these huge armed vehicles, and they actually believe that Warren was telling the truth in that moment, because you're seeing exactly what he said. So that's another interesting thing.
I want to play a couple of clips here, because this question came up for me, and I'm sure others, about is Warren Jeffs just crazy? There's this moment in the film where he's in custody, and he has this time where he, for a time, says that tells people that he's not the prophet, that in fact he's a fraud. I want to play this clip here, because do you want to say something about how you got this? I mean, this is his conversation that he's having with people when he's in jail, I guess, of course.
Yeah, these are the prison tapes that we were able to get through Sam Brower. It is one of those moments where you think everything's going to turn around in the story. And then, of course, you know, I do think he's crazy. You know, you just asked that question. I do think he's crazy. And that's why when the sheriff of Schlager County generously offered us all of their surveillance video that they took when he was awaiting his trial there is evidence to support the fact that he's crazy.
I want to play that too, because that's real. But let's start with you'll hear John Krakauer in this clip and Warren Jeffs. Mm-hmm. Let's just play it from Prophet's
Okay.
He went through a period when he was on trial where he started telling the closest people to him, his brothers, his wives, his bishops, his lawyers, that I'm a fraud.
You can tell anybody who wants to read this message, even apostates and Gentiles, that I have been a liar. And the truth is not in me. I'm not the prophet. I never was the prophet. This is not a test.
It was sort of the one moment when he was lucid and honest and seeing reality. But, you know, whenever he tells this to people, he said, no, you know, this is just the devil speaking.
So he has this one moment of lucidity, as John Krakauer says. But Krakauer says, and what you said earlier, by any measure, he's just plain crazy. But I kept wondering, I mean, clearly he's manipulative, but is he just, I mean, how crazy is he? How much of a psychopath could he be? I mean, do you think you've figured that out?
I mean, the levels of psychopathy is, I don't know how you even can go into that. I've been watching The Jinx on HBO, and I think there's another really interesting thing to compare it to. I mean, it's, do you believe your own lies? Do you recreate, you rewrite history? Do you have any, I think that when I found out early on that he killed all the animals down in Short Creek, that's a huge, you know, connector to sociopathy. He's crazy. I mean, he is just so far out there. And the fact that he's making these revelations based on news events, you know, there's going to be a huge earthquake. See, I told you so. You know, there's going to be war in the Middle East. See, I told you so. He just comes up with any headline that he sees on CNN, tells his people it's going to happen, and then it happens because they don't watch the media. So then they are not allowed to watch any kind of news or anything. That's right. Part of, you know, his indoctrination process. So he's crazy, yes. And is he dangerous? That's the question, I think. And, you know, I think that's the big question, is how dangerous is he?
Yeah. Because you come back to that in the film. Mm-hmm. That scene that you were referring to, I'm actually not going to play that clip because I want people to see it. It's the sheriff, David Doran, from Schleicher County, talking about what Warren Jeffs has been doing in this cell, where he will at times for an hour just kind of stand there, and he looks in the mirror. He's crazy. I guess that's the bottom line.
So I think it might be nice to just bring up, since we have this screening coming up this week, I think that something that people will be very interested in about this story, especially people in the Salt Lake area, is how the government is involved and how the money is getting transferred around and how the taxpayers are paying for this lifestyle that Warren is leading. And I think that would be something that Sam can really elaborate on in the Q&A. But you have to realize how much money is going to these people from the state. I think that's a whole other issue that we didn't even really tackle in the film. Yeah. But I think that Sam can really talk about that with the audience on Wednesday night.
Good. The question also comes up, how is he able to keep a grip on his power? And one of the things that Sam talks about in the film is that essentially what he's done is said, look, I'm atoning for your sins as a people. You are not obedient enough. So God is chastising you, and the punishment, I'm your savior, essentially. I'm in prison to atone for your sins. And that line seems to be working, I guess.
It's amazing. It's amazing. That's part of this indoctrination from birth, that they believe that, you know, that's true. It's really sad.
John Krakauer says Warren Jeffs has maybe more power now than he's ever had. Do you think that's true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the mind control, the distance, you know, the fact that the government is keeping him away from his people, you know, and he's their savior. He has a lot of power. And it's really, really scary because you'd never know when he's going to make his next move. And that's the one that people are fearful of, because he doesn't want to let go of his power. He doesn't want to give it over to his brother. So will he take everyone down with him?
Let me play one more clip. This is John Krakauer. And he talks about it, what I think is an underlying theme throughout. Why do people believe what they believe? From the film Prophets Pray.
So you have a guy who's, by any measure, is crazy. He's not a rational person. And he has this megalomania. And that, you know, is disturbing. But what is really disturbing is how all these other thousands of people buy into it and don't question it. He's able to persuade them that, no, this is the truth. I really do speak to God, and your salvation depends on me. And he does terrible things to them. He takes away their families. He takes away their fortune. He sends them out to repent, and they still must turn over their income. And they still believe him, and they continue to believe him. And that's mind-boggling. And it speaks to something disturbing about, you know, human nature, or how once you believe something, you know, once you've been brought up to believe something, it's very, very difficult to give that up completely.
Amy Berg, let me ask you finally, about a minute left. One of the questions you come to at the end of the film, that's asked by Randy Mankin, actually, is, where do people like Sam Brower and other observers like Randy, where do they go from here, and what happens to the children? I mean, those questions are really still very much up in the air, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's why we're all here, and I really do hope that there's something that can come of this film and some education to the people who are still believers that maybe they're following the wrong person, because it is really scary to think that these are people that could potentially harm themselves, their children, in the name of Warren Jeffs.
Amy Berg, her film is Prophets Pray. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. You can see it on Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Amy's going to be there. Sam Brower will also, for a Q&A after the film. You can get the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Amy Berg, see you on Wednesday. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. This was great. See you all soon.
Radio West, a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover. The program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.